Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. Our subject is fibromyalgia, and we're talking to an expert. She is Dr. Ginevra Lipton. She is author of a book that is soon to be released, but you can pre-order it now. It's The Fibro Manual, a complete fibromyalgia treatment guide for you and your doctor. You can pre-order it at Amazon.com. And so in part one, you kind of laid out a treatment strategy for fibromyalgia, which is the four R's: rest, repair, rebalance, and reduce. So let's focus on the rest part. What about sleep? Sleep seems to be a real important mediator, and without optimizing sleep, you can't move on to repair and rebalance and reduce.
Absolutely. Yeah, sleep is kind of the key. And the challenge is we don't think about how well we sleep very much, and so people might not bring it up to their doctor, but everybody with fibromyalgia universally complains of poor, non-refreshing sleep. And the key is what people are not getting into the deep quality sleep, the kind of broccoli of sleep, that real nutritious sleep. They're staying in the more light, Twinkie sleep. So you're getting calories, but not actually the nutrition of sleep. So my job in treating fibromyalgia is to try and help people get into deep sleep. So the key to do that is to try and eliminate things that are interfering with your sleep. So for some people, that might be sleep apnea or abnormal movements while they're sleeping. So often I will recommend getting a sleep study just to make sure there's not some other treatable interference with their sleep. Sometimes it's medication related. Unfortunately, the opiate pain medicines that we often use to treat the pain of fibromyalgia are actually pretty, they negatively affect sleep. And they really kind of cause, I think, this spiral where it might help with pain during the day, but then it's interfering more with your sleep at night, so you feel worse the next day, so you have to take more pain medicine.
And would it be like oxycodone or Furoscit or Furanol, those types of medications?
Yeah, or Vicodin. Morphine. Mm-hmm. Yeah, any of those. I mean, there can be a role for those in managing fibromyalgia pain, but I try and keep it away from bedtime hours just to limit that sleep interference. And then the next step is to try and help your body to be in as calm a place as possible when you're going to bed. So that's kind of trying to practice good sleep hygiene, maybe doing a relaxation exercise before you get in bed. Those are all things that it's really important for patients to do for themselves. And it's hard, actually, but once you get in that habit of good sleep hygiene, then it kind of it's a lot easier to kind of maintain it.
Regular sleep hours, you know, uncluttered bedroom, screens, and so on and so on.
Exactly. The analogy I give patients is, you know, with our kids, we definitely have like a regular bedtime and, you know, we have a bedtime routine. We wouldn't give our kids a whole bunch of candy and then let them stay up till 10 o'clock and then just put them in a room with the TV on and say, okay, good night. You know, we have this really strict kind of routine, but then with ourselves as adults, we sort of get rid of that. So you got to kind of get back to that routine. And then when you've done those things, then it's a matter of talking with your physician or provider about, are there any medications that might help me to get into deeper sleep? And natural treatments that do that are magnesium. There's some herbs that can do that, like rhodiola. Passion flower can be helpful. Often I end up using maybe a low dose of the muscle relaxants, like cyclobenzaprine or Flexeril is a common one.
Well, that really knocks you out. The one time I took that for a back problem, I was like, whew, I was just gone.
You wanted to use low doses.
It's not for daytime use.
Right, exactly. So that's kind of the piece, and a large portion of my book is devoted to kind of, here's what to talk to your doctor about, because most doctors, unfortunately, don't really know that sleep connection, that key component in fibromyalgia. They don't quite understand that you might need to use X, Y, and Z medication to improve sleep quality to help the brain get into deep sleep.
So other medications that have been useful, you know, you probably wield a prescription pad from time to time, medications like Cinequan or Trazodone. Sometimes I use those, small doses of those. What about the ordinary sleeping pills? You know, we now have Lunesta, we've got Ambien. Are those, unfortunately, you know, they do knock you out, but they don't produce the same, quote, sleep architecture,
right,
which is
exactly
what's really necessary for restorative sleep. They will, you know, render you unconscious and supine,
right,
but maybe
right,
not do the job, right?
And what they do is they treat insomnia. So if you're having a hard time falling asleep, that can be helpful. But you're absolutely right that they don't really change the fundamental sleep architecture. They don't change or improve your deep sleep. So often we're more in kind of the trazodone, cyclobenzaprine, mirtazapine I use a lot. And those actually have some evidence that they do improve and increase deep sleep. I also will use gabapentin or pregabalin, Lyrica, both of which are really commonly used for fibromyalgia pain.
Lyrica or Neurontin, yeah.
Yeah, I will use them at night, you know, so maybe a combination would be 300 of gabapentin and 2.5 of a Flexeril. So just a, you know, a lower doses, but that's enough to kind of get your brain into that deeper broccoli sleep, and it will make a difference.
You know, when I heard about the advent of Lyrica, I was very hopeful because we have a lot of fibromyalgia patients, and I was saying, hey, you know, this is going to be great because it's specifically designed for fibromyalgia. And then I tried it on my fibromyalgia patients, and the vast majority of my patients either got minimal relief or got really blown away by it, because many of those very self-same patients are very sensitive to medications, and they feel hungover or malaise from the medications themselves. So it was really oversold as a magic bullet for fibromyalgia. It's not this is not a pharmaceutical fix for that condition.
No. Yeah, you're absolutely right. And I've had the same experience, a lot of side effects with Lyrica. I tend to avoid using it in folks during the day at all. I just dose it at night. And mm-hmm. if you do low doses at night, I found it to be mm-hmm. much more tolerable and pretty successful, actually.
Okay. Good. That's a good tip. And we also have a lot of health professionals listening, so you know, maybe they can avoid some of the pitfalls of prescribing these medications.
Yes.
What's your take on things like theanine? Theanine is one thing that's been proposed for sleep. It seems to help deepen sleep and produce some degree of relaxation.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think for some people that can be a great option. I often find that needs to be combined with a few other things. Like there's some nice products that combine theanine plus passion flower,
valerian,
melatonin, or valerian. Yeah, but I think having those things can be really helpful for some people. Absolutely.
Indeed. Okay, so let's presume that we've made some progress towards sleep, but there's more to rest than just sleep, right?
Right. So the other piece, and that's really kind of a more complementary or integrative component, is trying to figure out ways that activate your own relaxation response. So, you know, for some people that might be yoga, for some people that might be deep breathing or mindfulness. So all those things that kind of counteract that fight or flight response. And that's not something that a physician or provider can do for someone else. That's really where the patient needs to do that for themselves. And once they're educated, people are willing to do it because it helps. It does. And it helps to kind of calm down the nervous system and actually can even reduce pain in fibromyalgia.
So how do you emphasize that in your practice? Because your practice, unlike conventional doctor's offices, you know, the people aren't just ushered in to your office, given a prescription, and then they go home. You have a multidisciplinary practice, right, where there are health coaches and advisors who can help people with these issues like relaxation and lifestyle.
Absolutely. So the multidisciplinary approach has been key. And the other thing that I've found really successful is that I have patients take a class before they have an appointment with me. And in that class, they learn from a health coach and actually a mindfulness instructor how to actually go through a couple relaxation exercises themselves. So they actually practice it themselves. And that's, I think, the key. You know, just hearing about it is different than doing it yourself. And that's what I found the most valuable. And then I can kind of remind them as we meet and talk, oh, remember that relaxation exercise? Try and put that into practice 3 times this week, things like that.
Mm-hmm. So let's move on to step 2, which is repair. What does that entail?
Mm-hmm. So the fundamental thing to keep in mind on the repair is that the fight or flight nervous system, when it's activated continually, really interferes with our ability to digest food appropriately. And so I try and really strengthen people's digestive ability. Sometimes that means altering diets. Sometimes that means adding digestive enzymes or probiotics. And then often there are some food sensitivities involved. So kind of tease out those and kind of help calm down inflammation in the whole GI system.
Well, you know, there is this, actually one of the hallmarks of fibromyalgia is it's thought to be muscle pain, but also often accompanied by fatigue and depression, certainly a sleep problem and insomnia or unrestorative sleep, but also very often irritable bowel syndrome. It's actually been described as one of the hallmarks of that condition.
Exactly. I don't think I have a single patient with fibromyalgia that does not have irritable bowel. And
okay.
I would say it's 100%. And the way I look at it is, it makes sense. You know, the sympathetic, the autonomic nervous system kind of regulates the functioning of our GI tract. And if that balance is askew, if it's primarily weighted towards more of the fight or flight or stress response, it's going to alter the natural healthy function of our gut. So I focus a lot on trying to restore healthy gut function. And, you know, digestive enzymes, chewing our food, eating slowly, all those things. And people learn about that in the class as well at my clinic. And then the next big piece of repair is working on the actual muscles and tissue themselves. So the one fallacy and the thing that, unfortunately, the message has not been received by the healthcare community is, yes, there are abnormalities in how people process pain in fibromyalgia, but there actually is something going on in the muscles and tissue themselves. There's a lot of tension in there. There's actually some low-grade inflammation, and it's particularly the fascia, that connective tissue wrapping around the muscle, that tends to get very tense and painful and inflamed and develop little trigger points, which are like painful knots of tissue.
They didn't teach you this in medical school, did they?
No, they did not. In fact, they still don't teach those in medical
school.
I learned this the hard way.
Right.
But the way to treat that is really to actually try and break up those connective tissue knots and to try and do some deep, kind of gentle stretching along with exercise and getting the blood flowing to those muscles. And so kind of a dual component of gentle exercise plus myofascial release, which is kind of slow, prolonged stretching of the fascia that's around the muscles.
Mm-hmm.
That's the big component.
What does it feel like? I mean, somebody is sort of kneading your body, pressing a little with a little firm pressure on certain trigger points, and then after a period of time, there's a release that occurs.
Yeah, I mean, it's not really a kneading. It's more like imagine a block of taffy that's cold, and you kind of put your hands on it, and you just let them sit there, and gradually the taffy underneath it would sort of melt and move apart.
Mm.
So what a myofascial release practitioner does is find areas that feel sticky in the tissue, and then gently, and it's actually pretty slow, they sit there for 3 to 5 minutes for each stretch, and it really, it's soft, it's gentle, it's not a rubbing or a kneading type motion. Because most people with fibromyalgia actually can't.
They're sensitive. They're sensitive.
Yeah.
Like if you
yeah.
gave them like deep tissue massage, they would just run out of there yelling. You know, they just say,
exactly.
I'm never coming back to you again.
Like, this is more like assisted stretching.
Right.
That's how I would call it.
Yeah, I'd like a very firm massage, you know, very, you know, like a very deep tissue, high pressure. But that wouldn't work for a fibromyalgia patient.
No, that would not work at all for me.
Right.
So I believe so much in myofascial release that I have a myofascial release practitioner here, and that's a huge component of kind of my treatment regimen with patients.
Well, that's very useful to have right there down the hall, just see the myofascial release therapist. So, okay, so then that is part of the repair component. Then we get to rebalance. What are we rebalancing?
So, again, our old friend, the fight-or-flight nervous system, has thrown off the balance of inflammation in the body, so there tends to be a lot of kind of low-grade inflammation. So working on reducing sources of inflammation, I talked about the gut, but also there can be kind of food sensitivities that are triggering inflammation, or in some folks there can be subclinical infections. Like, I've had some patients that have a dental infection kind of gone undiagnosed, and it's really triggering a lot of inflammation. I don't know if you've seen that in your practice.
So like a root canal that's infected or something. That's like a
And it's not quite enough to cause them huge problems, but it's enough to cause just kind of this low grade inflammation. So working on finding any hidden infections, and then inflammation. There's some kind of natural ways to reduce inflammation. I try to avoid the heavy duty pharmaceutical anti-inflammatories just because of their side effects.
Right.
But sometimes those can be helpful for more severe cases. And then there's a lot of hormone imbalance that, that gets triggered by the fight or flight nervous system activation.
It seems to me that one of the manifestations of one of the manifestations of hypothyroidism is achy body, and that some patients, paradoxically, thyroid is a stimulant, but some patients sleep deeper with thyroid, and it eliminates some of their bodily aches and pains.
Absolutely, and I think there's a lot of people with fibromyalgia that have kind of undiagnosed or undertreated hypothyroidism, and there's a lot of overlap between those two conditions, and I've definitely seen people that when I've kind of got their thyroid adequately replaced, their fibromyalgia sleep is much improved, and their pain is improved.
Good. So well, I'm glad you have the same impression. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So I try to work, and the adrenals tend to be pretty exhausted in fibromyalgia because that fight-or-flight nervous system, it's punching down at them all the time. And so doing some just gentle adrenal support things often help. And people that are really having a lot of fatigue, I'll focus first on their adrenals, usually. And then there's often some issues right around menopause. Women with fibromyalgia tend to have a huge flare in symptoms. So when you have any kind of disruption in the sex hormone axis, then you have to address that as well.
You know, the male pilot that I was talking to you about, he responded really well to testosterone. I measured his testosterone; was quite low. He had a terrible schedule, of course, as a pilot, and was very stressed. And his testosterone was very low. And I administered testosterone, and the guy told me he was better. Didn't come back. 6 or 8 years later, he came back, and he said he's doing great. And he brought his wife in, who was suffering from fibromyalgia. But but I think that illustrates the power of a hormonal intervention for men and women. That really needs to be looked at.
And pretty much every male patient with fibromyalgia, I check their testosterone level because it's often low. And it can be such a huge, they can just get such an improvement in muscle pain and fatigue.
Because it is anti-inflammatory. And it might also help with a sleep disorder. Low levels of testosterone sometimes cause fitful sleep, for sure.
Yes, absolutely. So that's a component of my workup for men with fibromyalgia, definitely.
Great. Are we ready for step four, which is reduce?
Sure. So the reduce component is more kind of getting back into the Western medicine piece. You know, if there's residual pain symptoms, I look at prescribing. Usually I avoid the opiate pain medicines. I prescribe a lot of topical compounded analgesic medications. I don't know if you've used any of those, but they actually work beautifully on the muscles.
Like massaging in like ketoprofen or something like that?
Yeah, it'll be a compounded gabapentin, ketoprofen, Flexeril, maybe a little lidocaine.
Very good. And this is actually, let me put in a plug for compounding pharmacies, which are really under fire now from the regulators. They are very supple in their response to doctors' custom demands for products that are just not available in regular drugstores. And so you've got your own formula, which is a concoction of different things that's put together by a compounding pharmacy. And that's to the advantage of your patients who need medication that wouldn't ordinarily be available.
Absolutely. And then they don't get the systemic side effects. And I think my experience with compounding pharmacies has been they are very, very strict in their processes, and there's some quite quality ones. So I use a lot of compounded things. And then I will sometimes use low-dose naltrexone, which
is very
an
nice
alternative way of treating treating pain.
So that's
kind of
great.
Focusing in on those symptoms and then trying to treat fatigue. I often, you know, sometimes if people really have severe fatigue, I'll use very low doses of things like Ritalin, just as kind of a temporary bridge until we can get people sleeping better, that kind of thing. And then the fibro fog is probably the hardest part to treat. There's not really a medication that treats that. You really have to kind of work on the sleep, work on reducing inflammation, get improved blood flow to the brain with exercise, and then that kind of naturally improves that.
Do you have any experience with intravenous treatments? Because the so-called Myers cocktail is a tool that we use for some of our fibromyalgia patients. It really provides them with high levels of magnesium, which they're often very deficient in. Magnesium, of course, as you know, has muscle relaxing effects and energy enhancing effects, along with certain B vitamins that we put into that. And actually, some studies have looked at that in relationship to fibromyalgia, some small pilot studies.
Yeah, I've seen those, and I think I've had several patients that have really had a lot of benefit with Myers cocktails. I haven't done a lot of infusion in my practice, just because of logistically I don't really have a good setup for it, but I think it can be really, really helpful, particularly for folks when their gut isn't working very well. So, you know, we can give them a lot of supplements, but they're not going to absorb it, so they can get it in intravenously. And magnesium, oh my goodness, everybody in fibromyalgia is deficient in magnesium.
Yeah.
So, yes.
Yeah, we'll see those. The conventional test for magnesium is pretty lenient. So you often find patients with normal magnesium levels by that conventional test. Will you do something like a red blood cell magnesium or an ionized magnesium, as we sometimes do? We'll see the levels actually are low within the cells where it counts.
Right. And there's been a couple studies showing actually that ionized magnesium levels, or the intracellular ones in fibromyalgia, are low, along with some hair sample studies also showed low magnesium fibro.
Yeah, so that's any particular favorite form of magnesium, because there are claims that it's magnesium malate is the bomb for fibromyalgia as opposed to other forms. I'm not sure that's been your experience.
Yeah, you know, I've heard that, and I found...
In fact, there's a product called fibromalic. You know, it's kind of like suggestive that it's helpful.
And there was one study showing that it was helpful, but they didn't compare it to other forms of magnesium. I have found, actually, that a lot of my patients don't tolerate magnesium malate, and I think maybe it's the malate component of it. So I actually use a lot more magnesium glycinate and citrate. And then I use a lot of topicals. There's topical oils and lotions. I love those.
For absorption. Yeah, it's controversial about whether they really get in systemically, but I think there may be something to it. Certainly an Epsom salt bath it can be very helpful for many patients.
Absolutely.
Is there a genetic component to this? Are we getting to the point where we might be able to screen people genetically for predisposition to fibromyalgia? I've seen some papers that suggest that some genes make you more likely to experience body aches and pains.
Absolutely, and we are getting closer and closer to figuring out which genes those are. It seems to be, and this is not a surprise, somewhere in those genes that help break down the kind of hormones or chemicals produced by the fight-or-flight nervous system. So those genes that break down epinephrine, if you don't break it down very well, you're going to have a prolonged effect from it. So what they're seeing is that somewhere in that area, those genes seem to be abnormal, either how you process or break down fight or flight nervous system chemicals, or what kind of receptors you have for those. So the studies are still kind of just showing this group of genes, but I think we will kind of nail it down even more over the next decade.
Yeah, it's interesting. Maybe that will help us determine with more precision who should get treatment. What about this anti-inflammatory diet? You mentioned the role of diet, and we alluded to the anti-inflammatory diet. What is inflammatory in the diet, and constitutes an anti-inflammatory diet?
So what I generally find is inflammatory in my patient's diet is gluten, dairy, and high sugar. So if you can cut those out, I kind of call that the anti-inflammatory diet. And I know there's a lot of different kind of diets out there, but I try and keep it as simple as I can just because it's hard to... manage a really complex diet when you're also dealing with fatigue and fog. So those are kind of the three biggies that I see.
Sometimes,
one?
Well, you know, I think you're absolutely on the right track. For some people, moving more towards a paleo-type diet or a Whole30 type diet might alleviate pain because it eliminates so many potential problem foods. And then, of course, there's a whole argument about nightshades. Do they play a role in the pain syndromes of some patients? It seems to be the case, but that is not universal for sure.
Right, absolutely. I think that's one of the greatest myths is that people say, oh, if you have fibromyalgia, you have to avoid nightshades. I'm like, well, possibly if nightshades are inflammatory for you, but not everybody has to avoid them.
Exactly. Anything to add on the fibromyalgia front?
I don't think so. I think I would encourage people, if they have fibromyalgia, to seek out myofascial release just to see if that is something that might help them as far as pain, because usually that's the thing people are really trying to get a hold of first. So that's my biggest kind of message, is look into myofascial release.
Okay. And what's today's Intelligent Medicine call to action? How can people find out more about this subject? Certainly your website has some very good articles and descriptions. FridaCenter.com, FRIDCenter.com.
And FRIDA Center.
I'm sorry, FRIDA. I dropped the A. Frida Center, as in Frida Kahlo, the Mexican artist. And your center is located in Oregon, correct?
Yeah, near Portland, Oregon. Yeah.
Near Portland. And do you accept patients from out of state? You insist that patients come to the center for initial consult, or do you do long-distance consultations?
I do accept out-of-state patients, but I do have people come see me for that first visit.
Right.
Yes.
Which is medically correct.
Right.
Yeah,
indeed.
It's tough to do long-distance telemedicine on patients you haven't even seen.
Yeah, it's tough to do a long-distance tenderpoint exam, I'll tell you that much.
Right. Maybe you can walk people through it on Skype, but I'm not sure that qualifies for a medical examination. So,
No, I don't think so.
And tell us about
the call to action would be myofascialrelease.com.
Okay.
M-Y-O-F-A-S-C-I-A-L, release.
It's F-A-S-C-I-A-L, fascial, myofascial. And
really,
tell us about the book. The book's coming out when?
It's coming out in May this year, and it's designed for both patients and for providers. So 90% of it is things patients can do for themselves, learning about the illness, and then 10% of it is a portion they can bring in to show their healthcare provider with some evidence-based guidance on, you know, how to treat sleep and fibromyalgia, things like that. So it's kind of trying to bring that information that your doctor should know but probably doesn't, trying to bring that into their purview.
And the good news is that while the book isn't officially out yet as of this broadcast, it can be pre-ordered now via Amazon.com.
Yes.
So we urge our listeners who want to learn more to get that book. It sounds great. And, hey, I want to be the first one to get a copy of that. Please put me on the
thank
list.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, no, I mean, because this has been a great conversation. And although, you know, we're really on the same wavelength in terms of our approach to fibromyalgia, I've learned a lot in my discussion with you. And I think it's great that you've taken your own personal challenge and transformed it into a boon for you professionally, but also for your patients who are the beneficiaries of such extensive experience and study and personal experience with this condition.
Yeah,
I think it's
blood,
great.
Blood, sweat, and tears, I would say. Yes, I really appreciate you having me on this podcast, and I've actually learned from you as well, so thank you.
Well, thank you so much. Ginevra Lipton, LIPTAN, and the website FridaCenter.com. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.